Exhibition number 22121, Rule 3.
Mr. Schofield, Rule 3.
Right. Well, and we were lucky enough to land in a field 5 miles from my battalion headquarters, so that was very good. And then Hamburg surrendered, and I heard that when I was swanning in a scout car with a driver. When I say swanning, having a look around the countryside, we thought that the war would finish officially any minute now. And I drove into the outskirts of Hamburg, and there was nobody about. Terribly badly damaged, but the roads had been bulldozed to give passage, and went right into the centre of Hamburg, and where there were two huge Akak towers. And we were standing there, and I saw a very tall and obviously very senior German officer coming towards me. So I told the driver to keep him covered with his Sten gun, and he came up, and he was the Akak commander of Hamburg, and he handed me his revolver. And I said, "What have you got in those towers?" And he said, "Whatever it was, 200 men and 100 Russian prisoners." So I said, "Well, turn out the whole lot, and I'll inspect them in 5 minutes' time. And I want to see what state the Russians were in, who were our friends at that time." And so I walked down the line, with him being covered the whole time by my driver, Sten gun. And the Russians said they'd been correctly treated, which I didn't believe, but I suppose they'd been told if they said anything else, they'd be done in. So I told them all the Russians were to have an enormous meal at once, and otherwise they would stay put until the two armoured divisions arrived in the town, which of course wasn't true. But that did the trick there. Then I got out of Hamburg as quickly as I could.
You said that there was stiff resistance at Ulzen?
Ulzen, yes.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I can remember movement, progress. 15th Scottish Division were with us again then, but so much in the way of impediments had been put down, cratering roads, blowing bridges, that it was a complicated operation. And lots of reconnaissance had to be done to find ways round, see if there are any other bridges further upstream or downstream that we could use that wouldn't collapse under the weight of a Churchill tank. A difficult time. Movement extremely awkward. But anyhow, we made it in the end. Then we went over the Elbe. There was a bit of resistance on the far side of the Elbe. And went on towards Kiel, where we had intelligence through that there were a lot of naval cadets who were likely to be difficult. So the commanding officer and I had a drink together and decided what we would do. We'd drive the tanks into Kiel. We had a map of Kiel. It had two or three parallel roads. And drive a battalion of Churchill tanks up and down these roads for an hour, spaced out so that when the last tank went, the first one came onto the tail again. And the population, other than sick or elderly, were to turn out, and there would be a German policeman every whatever it was, 200 yards, whenever a tank with a pennant was flying, they had to salute. And we had a lot of Germans the night before washing the tank, told to wash them because they were pretty muddy. And then we did this drive through Kiel and we had no trouble at all. And the Scots Guard came up and captured a submarine intact. And then VE Day.
During your active service in the Second World War, do I understand that you were not injured?
No, I was unharmed. I had a splinter hit my breast pocket of my battle dress, which had a silver cigarette case in it and got dented, no more damage.
Where did that happen?
That happened in Normandy.
But you were also telling me earlier off the record that you had a narrow escape from a Minenwerfer? A Moaning Minnie?
Moaning Minnie, yes. I had no escape from Moaning Minnie, which fell on top of the turret of my tank. But luckily at that moment I was giving a rocket to a gunner sitting just in front of my leg, because he didn't seem to be doing what I was telling him, but his earphones had gone kafut. So my head was inside, but that, it blew off my earphones and the aerials. And I've been fairly deaf ever since, but never mind.
How do you feel now about having served with the Coldstream Guards in the Second World War?
Oh, great. It's a wonderful regiment, formed in 1650, and the oldest Guards regiment. And a lot of wonderful people. A lot of wonderful guardsmen from all over the country, but mostly from up north. And I couldn't have wished to serve in a finer regiment.
After VE Day, were you in the occupation of Germany?
Yes, we moved from just north of Kiel after a few weeks when all our tanks were handed in and we became an infantry battalion again. We moved to Monschau on the German-Belgian frontier with 60 miles of the frontier to look after, to catch escaping Nazis if possible, and the amount of smuggling that went on. So we had guards duties up and down the 60-mile border. Most days they brought in what appeared to be pregnant women, but they were carrying coffee in special bags around their tummies, smuggling it from Belgium into Germany.
Did you apprehend any escaping war criminals?
No, we didn't, unfortunately.
When were you demobbed?
1947. The battalion by that time had moved back to north of Kiel to a barracks at Eckernförder, where we spent a bit of time and one or two final parades with functionaries coming to see us. And then we came back to England to Pirbright, where we had a march past of the battalion in front of the regimental colonel, Budget Lloyd, General Sir Budget Lloyd, and then started disbanding at Pirbright. And having disbanded the battalion, having checked the petty cash, I disbanded myself.
When you were at Eton before the war, did you get any kind of preparation for military service?
Well, I was in the OTC, Officer Cadet Training.
What did that involve?
Well, that involved a once-a-week parade, arms drill, that sort of thing, and once a year camp, usually at Tidworth, which went on for about a week. This was always very energetic and good fun.
You were telling me earlier that your family is connected with the north of England, historically.
Yes, Lancashire.
Can you tell me what you told me earlier, please?
Well, they came from the town of, or the area of Rochdale in Lancashire, where on the outskirts are still an old ruin called Schofield Hall, which is not very pleasant to look at because it seemed to be large boulders, stones, coloured black. And there's still Schofield Street and Schofield Road in the town. So they were there from very early days. And I think originally came from the Saxons.